welcome to On Tour with Sports 24. I'm Emma Saunders, and this is your guide to the world's most iconic sporting cities. Each episode, we delve into a different sporting city to get a taste of its sports and culture, hear what the locals would recommend, and find out what you should experience when you come to visit. It's what Sport 24 is all about, a sports channel that connects onboard passengers to those unmissable live sporting moments across the world. So whether you're flying at 35,000 feet or relaxing on your ocean cruise, you can be watching the game live. It's the only way to travel, so buckle up and sit back. This is On Tour with Sport 24.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Sport 24, we'd like to welcome you to Las Vegas.
For this episode, we're in Viva Las Vegas. And as always, for all your sporting city travelling hints and tips, I'm joined by our TikToker extraordinaire, Rob Adcock. Hello, Rob.
How are you? You good?
I'm very well. The phrase is, usually, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But for the purpose of this podcast, I'm afraid we'll have to take the complete opposite approach and you'll have to tell us everything. So when you first think of Vegas, what first comes to mind in your visits there?
So, for me, I've been lucky enough to go four or five times. That sounds like a humble brag, I appreciate. But I've done it on a budget. I've done it on not so much of a budget, which to most people is a budget, but to me is quite flamboyant. I've done the expensive nights out. I've done the end up in a $2 Bud bar on Fremont Street. I've done the sitting in a club on a table next to Floyd Mayweather, Peter Andre,
Clang.
Mark Wright.
Name dropping, Mark Wright. Right, left and centre.
I appreciate that. It's quite a niche reference for UK audience, Mark Wright. But those kind of people...
Reality TV, the only way is Essex, if you are from outside the UK.
Yeah, and I've been picked up on a motorway by a lowrider because I found myself on the outskirts of Vegas and got dropped off at Bellagio. That was a very interesting night, but we'll try and get on to
that. I'm not sure this episode is going to give us enough time to get into all of that.
It's a good one because you can do everything. So you can stay in the cheaper hotels that are like obviously subsidised by different places. You can stay in the really fancy ones. You go there when you've never been before. You think, right, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to walk from one hotel to the next hotel. I'm going to do the entire strip in a night. But you can't do it. It's that big. And it's not until you get there you see the scale of it. And you just see, obviously, it's the City of Lights, Sin City. And you think about what it's like and you've seen the pictures. But when you get there and you're in it, it's just like all your senses are just flooded with just neon lights. And this idea that you've got that you're going to go to every single hotel is just, it's never going to work. It's like, literally, you'll pick a hotel for one night and that is where you're going to stay because there might be two or three clubs in that one hotel. You can do it all. It doesn't have to cost a fortune, but you can have the best time if you want to.
I suppose hence the four or five visits then. You need to keep going back to get it all in. You mentioned there a little bit, you know, the bright lights, the casinos, the fancy restaurants. But remember, this is all about sporting city. So just tell us briefly about, as a sporting city, what it has to offer.
I think when you think about Vegas, I think if you speak to anyone that's known of Vegas for a decent amount of time, automatically, they'll always think of boxing because that is the thing that everyone thinks about. You think about Amir Khan, you think about Ricky Hatton, you think about Floyd Mayweather against, who was it, that really famous match against Manny Pacquiao in the MGM Arena. So you think about that now when you think about the UFC and all the things that happened there. But I know Darren, who's our guest on this podcast, will tell us more about it. But what Vegas have tried to do now is go from this, right, okay, we're going to go for the boxing, we're going to have a proper big blowout, and then we're going to leave again and try and make Vegas more of a city and a sporting place for the people that live there. So now you've got the Vegas Golden Knights, the ice hockey team. They won the Stanley Cup in 2023. They've had an amazing couple of years. You've got very soon the MLB team, Athletics, will be coming to Vegas. So there's so much going on. Of course, Formula One. You think about that really famous race that's been happening there. You think about NASCAR. There is so much to see and to do. It is just the best place to talk about on this podcast.
Well, you've mentioned there, we do have a special guest joining us. So without further ado, let's bring him. We've got a man who's lived and worked in Vegas, which absolutely fascinates me. Delighted to say that broadcaster Darren Millard is with us. Hi, Darren. How are you doing?
Good to be with you guys. Sorry about the voice, just getting over some laryngitis. I'm trying to sound big and burly as a Canadian living in Las Vegas. I have not been out drinking all day. I just want to put that to rest right now. I'm not trying to live up to the notion of Vegas with this voice.
Well, I have to say, it's very fitting all the same. And Darren, I think anyone I know that's gone to Las Vegas, it takes them about 5 working days to recover from a trip that they've taken there. So as I said, it's quite fascinating that you've lived and worked there. So tell us exactly what that's like.
Well, it's really 2 different cities, Emma. There's the city for the locals, and then there's the city for the tourists. And at any given time, the number of tourists can rival 700,000 people coming in on a big weekend, whether it's the Super Bowl or Formula One, a big weekend like that. And then you've got about 2 million people that live here year-round who will dabble in the Strip and enjoy the different amenities of the Strip, but also fall back to the suburbs and just live a regular life. And that, to me, is the greatest part. And the idea of being exposed to that when I moved here was I only knew the Strip. I only knew that part, the energy of the Strip, the restaurants, the nightclubs, because I'm a very hip person. I hit all those places, the pools. I only knew that. But being a local now and living here for 5 years, working for the National Hockey League team, the Golden Knights, it's an amazingly diverse city in the suburbs that offers some of the most diverse opportunities for activities that you will find in the United States.
What I always find interesting, Darren, is when you live in a destination city like you do, how do you manage to balance like living a life, but then everyone wants to come and see you and everyone wants to go out to the Strip? How do you live a normal life knowing that every other weekend someone's going to want you to go on a night out with them?
That's impressively for you, a very good question, because it's a balancing act. I'm not going to lie. We don't go as a family. We have 2 teenage daughters and my wife. We don't go to the Strip a lot, except when people are in town. We save all that stuff when we have visitors, and we probably have somebody in town once a month at least, and we'll go. We have our favorite clubs. We have our favorite shows. We have our favorite restaurants, and we'll go into town. My job is home games are on the Strip, T-Mobile Arena, where the Golden Knights play. So I'm down there every couple of times a week. So I'm there, but I'm in and out on that side. But as far as the trying to walk that line of digging your feet right in and diving into the Strip, we kind of save that for when people are in town, and then we can kind of use it as a big night out instead of trying to walk that line and being tired all the time.
And Darren, just paint the picture for us as to how it is or what it's like as a sporting city on the ground. Because from the outside looking in, it does feel as if year on year it's becoming more and more so recognised as one of the big global sporting cities with these franchises popping up. But you tell us, is that how it feels on the ground? Is it quite an exciting place to be in that respect?
It's boomed. It absolutely exploded on the professional sports franchise. Up until 2017, this was a minor league town with some baseball teams and some soccer teams that were not at the highest level. And then you had some college athletics with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, which is a marquee college, won an NCAA basketball title. Those are the big fish. And then you had sports that would come in, do a big weekend like boxing. Boxing was the main sport that Vegas was really known for. UFC and mixed martial arts has come in, certainly in the last little bit. But there wasn't a home team. There wasn't that professional team, that high-ranking elite at the top of its sport home team. And that changed in 2017. The National Hockey League made the decision. Bill Foley is the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights. Worked with the National Hockey League and was the first one in. And he did 2 things. One, he was the initial team to get in, and it was a massive success. They were great out of the gate. They had some success, and he catered it to locals, Emma. And that may surprise some people because it is such a tourist city and a destination city. But Bill Foley targeted everything to locals. He wanted the people that live here to fill the rink, not people coming in from out of town. He named the team the Vegas Golden Knights, not the Las Vegas Golden Knights, because locals, when you live here, you refer to this place as Vegas. You never call it, oh, I live in Las Vegas. The loss is never uttered by a local. So he did a lot of things to cater to locals. And when he established this franchise, the ticket sales were incredible right off the bat. They had success right off the bat. They went to the Stanley Cup final in the first year, and they were an absolute hit right away. And it opened the door. And from that first year, the NBA started looking at it. Major League Baseball was examining it. The National Football League was hot on it. The National Football League is here now with the Los Angeles Raiders. So there's, I think you can compare the National Football League success and the acceptance by the locals hasn't been nearly as dynamic as that of the Vegas Golden Knights. And it'll be interesting to see. Baseball's coming. The Oakland A's are coming here in the next 3 years. Will they keep the A's? Will they change the name? Will they go Vegas? I think there's some question marks there. And the NBA will be here within 10 years. They'll have all four major sports in a city of just over 2 million within 10 years.
Well, Darren, in amongst the picture you've painted of the sporting scene in Vegas, you did mention your beloved Vegas Golden Knights, a team that you know inside out. So let's start there and tell us a little bit more about them and what a match day looks like.
Okay, it is the most Vegas thing I can describe. And I am from the middle of Canada, very conservative, very small town. Vegas Golden Knights game is totally opposite than anything I've ever experienced. And I've had to get into it, and now I fully embrace it. But you go to a Vegas Golden Knights game, and it starts with the plaza out front, which is just one big party because the weather's normally very good. You come inside, and there's this theatrical presentation before the game that is half beautifully wonderful theater, and the other half, some of the cheesiest production that you're ever going to see, very Vegas. And they somehow put the two of them together, and they do two different presentations a year. And that gets everybody going. And it is just off the charts cool. The players actually get somebody to record it so they can see it because they're in the locker room at the time. So it starts off with this beautiful presentation that will blow everybody's minds. And then during the game, normally there's different aspects of a presentation when the puck is out of play, when the whistle goes and you're between action. In Vegas, it turns into a nightclub, which is electric. We have a DJ and the place is going crazy, and there's stuff on the scoreboard that is different than any other place in the world. And then they drop the puck and it goes back to a hockey game. And same thing. And then during the intermission.
So Vegas, I love it.
Yeah, and there's people like dressed up to, I've seen, there's one fan, I love it, comes as Winnie the Pooh like four times a year. I don't know why. There's no theme to it. There's other people that are dressed in as flamingos because there's a flamingo theme to Vegas. Everybody, it's a dress-up party. It's Halloween, but with style every game. It is the coolest atmosphere in the National Hockey League by far.
Obviously, Darren, as a former player yourself, when the Golden Knights are trying to attract players, the fact that it is Vegas, does that help?
The Strip isn't a draw itself to get players to come here. What is a draw is the lifestyle outside of the rink. Vegas is 2 million people, but where all the players live, where the practice facility and the offices are for the Vegas Golden Knights is in Summerlin, which is about 25 minutes northwest of the Strip. And it's, I call it the biggest small town in the world. It's got everything you want. It's got great lifestyle. It's got schools that the players can lean into with their kids, but it's got a low exposure. They're not tracked down by every fan around the corner when they're out their dinner. The reason why is because Bono might be at the restaurant next door. Carrie Underwood might be down the street. There's stars everywhere around Vegas, so the players can kind of slide under the radar. So they love that. They love the weather, and the team has had an enormous amount of success backed by an owner that is fully committed, and that also helps immensely.
Well, Darren, you had me at fancy dress. So how easy is it to get tickets, or is there such an appetite now with people who live in Vegas that actually when you're on the ground, it's not so easy to go and watch the Golden Knights?
Yeah, it's not easy. This is a team that has 18,000 plus seats in its building and is majority-wise filled by the home team. So there will be tickets available on the secondary market if you want to go down that path. But by and large, this is a home team more so than a tourist team. The locals dominate the fan base here.
I really wanted to touch on that because you mentioned the arena, the T-Mobile Arena, from where it is. You mentioned Bill Foley as well. So fans of the Premier League will know that name because he's the owner of Bournemouth.
Up the Cherries.
Yes, exactly. But when we talk about where the arena is, it's not like when you go and see some sports where, let's say you're in LA and you want to go and see one of the sporting teams there, it might be quite far out. It's right in the middle of the strip, isn't it? So it's right in the heart of it.
Right there on the western end a little bit, but it is like feet away from Las Vegas Boulevard. In fact, at the championship parade, did I mention that the Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup in its sixth season? When the team held the championship parade, but my wife and my oldest daughter were able to participate in on double-decker buses, we started at the arena, T-Mobile Arena, went around and came out onto Las Vegas Boulevard and went down and then took a right turn and we're right back at the arena. Like, it's that close. We are right there on the strip. So if you want to experience the Golden Knights, you don't have to leave that strip. You do have an easy geographic map to get around if you want to go to a Golden Knights game.
So then let's delve deeper into the Golden Knights now and speak to Stephanie Rogers, who's the VP of Marketing. Stephanie, how the devil are you? Are you okay?
Yeah, wonderful. Wonderful to chat with you guys and excited to hear all of your insights into Vegas.
Thank you so much for coming on. The first thing I really want to get a kind of an idea about, and Darren's mentioned this, is how important Golden Knights are for Vegas. What's it like to be in and around the club?
Yeah, well, we really pride ourselves on being Vegas born, right? That was one of our very first brand messages. And it really is something that we take to heart every single day. If you walk into our offices, we have gigantic murals across the walls that honor and acknowledge being Vegas born. So what that means is we were the first professional sports team to call Vegas home. And we really believe that, you know, we are as much a Vegas local as any of the people that have been born and raised here. And we try to emulate that every single day. So with that in mind and knowing that that's kind of where we started on day one, I would venture to say, or I would hope to say that the Golden Knights are very important to the community, but we take that importance and that responsibility very seriously. So it's something that we're very proud of, but we don't take for granted either.
For you, when they managed to get success so quickly, how did that happen? Because for people that have got a kind of a passing interest in ice hockey and the NHL, it seemed like such an amazing success story so quickly.
Yeah, it really was an amazing success story very quickly. I mean, we have pretty brilliant minds on the hockey operations side, right, that were able to get us a wonderful team and you know, full of an incredible amount of talent from around the league that first year. And then, you know, they knew how to channel it. And I think there was a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. The, you know, first year, one of the guys dubbed themselves the Golden Misfits. And they really wanted to prove to the world that they, you know, deserved this place to be with, you know, having been left open in the expansion draft and calling Vegas their new home. So, I mean, that in and of itself, just from a competition standpoint, is pretty impressive. And I mean, it's once you come to one of our games and you see the entertainment factor and you see, you know, how lively the experience is, even if you've not been a hockey fan before, it's really hard to walk out of the arena and not feel completely energized and intoxicated by just the atmosphere that our games provide to all of our fans.
You mentioned the name, and Darren's touched on this as well, about them being called the Vegas Golden Knights rather than the Las Vegas Golden Knights, because Vegas is what... This is one of the things we've learned from this podcast. The name Golden Knights, though, where did that... Is that a homage to anything in particular?
Yeah, so our owner was actually in the military and has a very incredible background, to be honest with you, in a lot of different facets, but he's very passionate about military and service, and the ideal of being a knight is anchored in protecting the unprotected, right? Like serving your community and kind of being the person that's going to go to battle to make sure that everybody else is okay. And so the gold really just came from kind of the glitz and glamour and Las Vegas as a whole and wanting to you know, lean in a little bit more on that side. But really the core of our brand ethos is baked in what the ideal of being a knight is.
So for the people that are listening to this now, for the listeners that have not got an affiliation in the NHL, why should they pick Golden Knights, Vegas Golden Knights, over all the others that they could pick? This is your big opportunity.
This is. Well, we are always recruiting to the Realm, which is the name of our fan base that we're super proud of. And I think it's just because it's the most fun environment, the best team. I mean, we won the Stanley Cup. We have the most fun inside the arena. We have this incredible gold jersey that's just so gorgeous to look at and fun to rock. And we're the most fun brand out there, I think. And I would say, come take a visit and check us out. And then if you leave and you don't feel that, let me know and we can work on it.
That's a promise. That's a Stephanie Rogers promise, but it sounds like. So let's say that someone's listening to this now. They're about to land in Vegas and they're going to come watch a Golden Knights game. What should they do beforehand? Where should they go before? What should they do after? What before they get to the arena?
Yeah, well, depending on the time, I would say you should certainly come out to City National Arena, which is where our headquarters and practice facilities are. All of our morning skates and practices are open to the public. So it's a lot of fun to get to see the guys kind of in the morning on game day. And a lot of our fans come and watch. And so you get the energy started early. Got to grab some gear. You have to show up to the game wearing gold. There's a lot of great retail opportunities once you get inside the arena, but there's nothing like walking up to the arena wearing the gold, getting your photo outside on the plaza. And then there's a lot of really cool bars and restaurants that line up right up to the plaza. And we actually do this fun thing called the March, where all of our cast, that's another thing that's different about us. We have an entire cast. We have mascots and a Golden Knight and a dance team and showgirls and drumline and everybody else, right? And they march through the New York casino and then down this little walkway where all these bars and restaurants are. And then they lead up to the stage and get the entire crowd rowdy before the doors open. So definitely be a part of all of those things. Grab something gold. And if you can get all the way out to Summerlin to see the guys warming up, do that too, because it's a lot of fun.
You've personally worked all over the world. You've worked in some amazing cities. How does Vegas compare?
It's really unique. It's really, really cool. I mean, I think the closest thing I can compare it to maybe is Melbourne, Australia, where the fandom is, you know, equally as intense as what our local fan base is. But, you know, it's just this incredible dichotomy of like the Vegas Strip and everything that means. And then for us, just really trying to embody the community and mesh those two together in a way that celebrates all facets of it. The fans here and the city here just absolutely embrace us. I mean, during the playoffs, we had all of the video boards up and down the strip and all around town with our graphics on it, right? And it's because a lot of these businesses are, you know, led by executives that are fans and season ticket holders. And so there's really no comparison, truly. I mean, it is such a unique place in this world, sports and entertainment capital of the world for a reason. And I don't know that there's another place that can really compare.
Just finally, obviously, living in Vegas, you must know all the insider trades. Darren's told us a few bits and pieces, but if you were showing a friend around Vegas who'd never been before, where's the place that they've got to go to?
So I would say from a lifestyle standpoint, getting out to Red Rock and really hiking and kind of checking that area out is just absolutely gorgeous, totally stunning. And then as somebody who's like hanging out on the strip the entire time, I would challenge everybody to go down to the Arts District. It's a really funky, cool, like sort of local little hideaway. They got a lot of really cool like music and bars and craft breweries and cool restaurants. And then if you want to indulge on the strip, they have incredible spas that I always like to make sure I find time for when I can outside of hockey season.
Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on. You've been brilliant. Brilliant to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to listen and can't wait to see you all in Vegas soon.
Well, let's turn our attention to the T-Mobile Arena. It's very much a multi-purpose venue. It's hosted various sports and entertainment events outside of the Golden Knights we've been talking about, so including concerts, award shows, beauty pageants as well. That's one for you, Rob. The arena has also hosted various combat sport events, including UFC, professional wrestling and boxing. And it's not the only one as a multi-purpose arena, Darren. There's quite a few, isn't there?
It's amazing how many sporting facilities are located in a city with one team, the Allegiant Stadium hosts the Las Vegas Raiders. That's a beast unto itself. The Death Star, they call it. You guys Star Wars fans, it's big and it's black. It looks like the Death Star in the original Star Wars, which is my favorite. So that's unique because it's a massive facility. But you've got MGM Grand, which offers all kinds of concerts, bands coming through, comedians coming through. It is just a marquee place. Mandalay Bay is where the WNBA champion Las Vegas Aces play. They've won the WNBA, the Women's NBA League, two times in a row, and it's a full-fledged arena. It can host hockey, but it is a full-fledged arena that's right on the strip that can have its own concert series. The Sphere. Have you guys heard of the Sphere? Or have you been under a rock?
Yes, I've seen so much of it on social media. It's everywhere.
So here's the thing with the Sphere. If you fly into Vegas, book your ticket on the right-hand side of the plane. Because you'll probably be landing going east to west, and you will be able to see the Sphere as you land. It jumps, it pops. And I mentioned I've been here for 5 years. It's really cool to have a new landmark that you've watched come up. But it is the most unique thing. I saw U2 there. I was very fortunate to go to U2. It was a fabulous, wonderful show. Those guys are absolutely iconic. But I could sit outside the Sphere and just look at it for 3 hours too, watching the different presentations that they put on the LED screen. But you've got Caesar's Palace, which is iconic in its own right, with this Hangover movie that you guys know, not just because of that, although I have wondered, is Tyson around here? The idea that you look at this building that is just created in such a different fashion. You've got venue after venue after venue that are unique in their own right. And I always chuckle that we'll be in Caesar's Palace and I'll look to my buddy and say, you know, there's like eight other of these exact places all down the strip, and we're packed. It's the sports books are amazing. Circa's one of the newest, and it's an over 21. It has this pool deck with massive screens for watching games, and this amazing sports book inside, and it's on the eastern side near Fremont Street, and it is absolutely, if you come to Vegas, you have to go to the pool at Circa just for the experience.
Two tips there then. Circa, let me write this one down. And the other one, get a flight on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
Right side. You will see it. So when I'm on the road with the team, I will always try to switch if we're coming back. And it doesn't matter, daytime or nighttime, I'll always try and sit on the right side and look at that thing, and it never gets old.
Now, Rob, you've been busy doing your research. As in every episode, we want to give you, the listener, the best tips about our chosen city, all in one handy list, whether that be places to have a bite to eat or simply somewhere you just have to visit. So now it is time for our Las Vegas, or should I say Vegas, tourist top five.
Starting at number five. Now, I don't really like telling you about the things that the obvious ones, but I am going to have to start with something that is up there as quite a tourist favourite. The Bellagio Fountains. Darren is going to moan at me. He's going to pull a face. He's going to say, you can't say that this is something that's a secret top five and start with the Bellagio Fountains, but hear me out. The reason why I think it's so good, it's right in the middle of the strip, so you see in Vegas in its full majesty. You get to see it right in the heart of everything that's going on. It's class to watch. If you don't know what it is, basically jet pumps out loads of water and it just dances to music. What more could you possibly want a way to spend your evening? There's loads of people gather around to watch it, but the reason why I like it, the reason why it's number five, it is all together
free!
Now.
Free!
It's always good.
I have a motto, free is better than cheap. So I'm with you on that.
And that is why we've got you specifically on this podcast. Number four, loads to do and see when you're going to Vegas. Personally, I could talk about how you could land in LA and then drive there. You could go and see the Hoover Dam. You can go and see the Grand Canyon and all that kind of stuff. There's loads to do. But when you get there, for me, if you wanted to pick out all the exhibitions, this could be a five-hour-long podcast. I could tell you about the Titanic exhibition, which I know Darren's probably going to be a big fan of. But for me, the Mob Museum is the one place that you've got to go to if you're going for something like that. It's all about organised crime and the impact that it had on the city. Now, I'm a geek, So all the names that you hear about in this mob museum are names that you've heard over the years. It dispels a few myths, they make a few new ones, but when you get back to the Strip, once you've been to the mob museum, you see it in a completely different light.
I did not know about the mob museum until I moved here, and it was one of the first things that we did as a family outing. I'm a great parent. Let's go to the mob museum, kids. and it was spectacular. And the mob influence on Vegas is part of the reason why it took so long for major professional sports to get here, because of that fear of the influence of that. Now it's waned over the years, but the Mob Museum is cool, and you feel like you're inserted into the world of the mob. I felt like a bat.
Number three on Rob's top five is Fremont Street. So people refer to it as like the original Vegas. It's the city's actual birthplace. It's like, compared to the Strip, it's like stepping back in time. It's like a shrunken down version of the city. It's 6 blocks long. It's all open air, so there's open air bars and all that kind of stuff. But the best thing about it is there's a zip wire that when you get on one side, you can zip wire right across to the other side. The street performers in, doing all the bits and pieces in front of them. So it is just one of those places that's a proper experience. You feel like you're in the original Vegas when you go there. And most importantly, it's that little bit cheaper than going out on the Strip. Number two is the Neon Museum. When you think of the city of lights, the city of sin, Las Vegas, you think about all those bright lights and fancy signs. Well, Vegas has got a bit of a habit that when something's a little bit old, a little bit rough, a little bit outdated, a little bit rough around the edges, they tend to blow it up, which makes me worry for my friend Darren while he works out there. So when it comes to the buildings, what happens to the famous signs? So, do you know, you've got this like magical hotel that's been there for years. What happens to all those amazing signs? Well, what they did was they've taken them all away, and all the buildings have gone, and they put them into this museum. Now, you might be thinking to me, Rob, I'm going to the City of Sin for a couple of nights. If you think I'm going to go and see a lot of old neon signs, I guarantee you, after 3 or 4 days of staring a margarita, one of those refillable ones that you get on the Strip, directly in the eye, and you've seen one too many blackjack tables, you're going to be scrolling back to this part of the podcast saying, oh, Rob, what was the name of that museum? Because you will need it. Go and enjoy it. It is class. Number one, the Sphere. Darren's mentioned it, but Darren, tell us why Sphere should be number one on anyone's list.
Well, it's the most unique building that you're ever going to see, because it's round, Sphere. And it has LED displays all around on the outside. So it's 18,000 seats. On the inside has the same type of LED display. If you're going to have your choice of tickets, don't sit on the floor, because you'll be looking straight up. Your neck will get sore. Sit in like the 200 or 300 middle of the road level. So you're more looking down and then straight ahead, because there's so much going on beyond the performers. And if you can't get to a major concert, whether it's Fish or U2, there is a daily presentation that you can go to, and it's not cheap. It's $40-$50, but it will put on a display in the Sphere, just a wonderful journey through time, through the desert and the skyline. And after the show, this is a little tip: walk down the Strip to a place, to another location, and pick up your Uber there. Grabbing an Uber at the Sphere after a show is a madhouse. So there's a little local knowledge. Go somewhere else, grab a beverage a block and a half, 3 blocks away, and have your Uber pick you up there.
Travel tips, keep them coming in abundance, Darren. You're welcome back anytime. That was our tourist top five with Rob and a little bit of Darren sprinkled in. And if you have just been or are planning a trip to Vegas, then we'd love to hear any of your travel hints and tips. And please do share your pictures and videos. You can follow Sport24 on Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram. And make sure you use the hashtag MySport24 to get in touch. Well, let's turn our attention to another massive event and stadium in Vegas now. The Allegiant Stadium opened in 2020, taking 3 years to construct and coming in at a cost of around $1.9 billion to build. And it was worth the investment, Darren, by the looks of it, becoming one of the nation's most spectacular sports stadiums.
Super Bowl. It brought the Super Bowl to Vegas for the first time ever, which was monumental. People never thought that would happen. And it was a massive success, to the point that they're talking about bringing the National Football League's title game to Vegas on a regular rotation. It was that big. And that brought that many people in. It also brought something to Vegas that it didn't have before. The ability to have stadium concerts and attract those, which includes Taylor Swift. They wouldn't have had Taylor Swift on the tour here. It wouldn't have been included, like Los Angeles, like all around the world, Tokyo, if not for Allegiant Stadium. So it's the National Football League, but it also has given up a few other opportunities. And it's shared with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV football team as well.
When you get there, can you describe what it's like? Because obviously for work, you go to many, many different stadiums and arenas. You've been all the way around the world. You've seen a lot of things. What is it like compared to those other places as just an experience and to see it?
It's overwhelming. And the roof is not open air, because that would be hard during the summer, but it's see-through. And that part gives you a different effect. And the one end has glass in it where you can see outside and sunlight comes in. And there's a big torch which honors the original owner of the Oakland Raiders, Los Angeles Raiders. So it's just, it's unique. But the coolest part is something that you won't even notice when you come in. They have a turf that is outside. So it's a grass field, a grass turf. It's outside all week. It's watered. It's exposed to sunlight. It's able to be grown. And then right before the game, it's on a track and it's wheeled in from the outside. And then it's in the stadium and away you go. I've watched it in like time-lapse photography and it's like, wow, how can I can't get grass to grow in Canada, never mind in the middle of the desert.
By the sounds of it, it's pretty state of the art, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right off the freeway,
As a facility. And I think you've touched on it a little bit already, but you talked about this huge retractable window to the southern side of the stadium, because you've said about the fact that the Super Bowl may return there on a regular basis. But it is now also home to the NFL's Raiders. And it's in this southern section where the light from the strip is able to pour through that
it's
you then get this black hole that I've heard talked about.
So it's the black hole or the Death Star. It's this ominous building. It's the most ominous facility that you'll ever walk up to. And you're like, what kind of evil is going on in here? Like, could they not have spruced this up a little bit? But that goes with the Raiders persona. They are the bad boys, always have been the bad boys of the National Football League. And they leaned into it hard. But then they also made that window, that south end, that offers the exposure of the strip, which one allows you when you're on the strip or you're going down the freeway to look in. You can't see a game, but you can look in. But if you're in the facility, you can look out and you can see the strip and you're like, do I really live here? There's all kinds of great sporting. The Aussie Rugby League was just here. Would have loved to have gone to that, but I was busy tending to my throat and Rob couldn't get me tickets. So, but that would have been cool too. So there's all kinds of different events that happen.
That segues nicely, actually. Luckily,
thank you, Emma.
The world population doesn't have to rely on Rob generally to get tickets into sporting
venues. 9 times
venues.
Out of 10.
Where can people get tickets to get to this incredible stadium? Is it quite an easy thing to do with there being lots of different pieces going on there?
Yeah, if you wanted to just go experience the stadium, there's tours that you can sign up for and be able to see from top to bottom and get to field level. And if that's what you want to do, that's great. But there's enough concerts. Pink is playing here. Paul McCartney is playing. There's enough availability. It's concerts and people like the events. You're not only battling locals for tickets, but you're battling tourists as well.
Well, let's touch on some of the other sporting events that Las Vegas boasts now and some future events it could host. Firstly, after its super exciting inaugural race in November 2023, let's talk fast cars and Formula One in Vegas. And we're delighted to say we have with us someone who truly knows every twist and turn of the street track there, the CEO of the Las Vegas Grand Prix, René Wilm.
René, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's a real pleasure to have you on. It seems like such a straightforward sell. You've got fast cars, bright lights, an amazing city to do it in. Can you just kind of explain what it's like and how F1 takes over the city?
Las Vegas is obviously the home of glamour, and it is a perfect marriage with Formula One. But how do you actually transform a town into a racetrack? That was our challenge. We had no playbook. We showed up in town with a sizzle reel and a dream, And through great partnerships with our founding partners, Wynn, MGM, and Caesars, as well as with the Clark County Commission and Public Works, we were able to create a racetrack in a matter of 18 months. And we were also able to build from the ground up a 300,000 square foot state-of-the-art LEED certified building, which was the home of the garages and the paddock club. So how did we go about that? It is truly transforming the strip with lighting trusses, with barriers. You can drive on our track just minutes before it shuts down to turn into a racetrack. And watching that transformation was incredibly rewarding when we actually got to race weekend.
You know, when you have that initial conversation where you say, do you know what? We've got this idea. We want to bring F1 to Vegas. What's the initial response? Because it seems like such a massive amount of work. I know that Vegas is obviously famous for massive, massive shows, but even that must have been like, where do we even start?
Oh, absolutely. There was a lot of excitement when we came to town and said, we have this idea. We want to turn the Las Vegas Strip, the iconic strip, into a racetrack. But very quickly, the conversation turned to logistics. And you're talking about encapsulating 3.8 miles of hotel rooms, 50,000 hotel rooms, getting employees to work, getting guests to their dinner reservations, to their hotels, while also getting over 100,000 visitors to our racetrack to enjoy the event itself. The logistics were very challenging, and our early conversations absolutely were focused around how can we keep traffic flowing and how can we ensure that the transportation system holds up.
I've been lucky enough to go to a couple of different F1 events. I've been to Monaco, to the British Grand Prix, and it's a real, unbelievable spectacle. What's the atmosphere like for a Vegas version? Because I can imagine it's off the scale.
It is absolutely electric. And one of the very unique things about our race is that we were the first walking circuit of Formula One. You can walk from any of the hotels to your seat. Whether you were in the paddock club, whether you're in a grandstand or a hospitality suite, you could absolutely get there by foot. And that was an incredible opportunity to see thousands and thousands of people walking around Las Vegas with tons of excitement about the race, Formula One merch, their favorite teams, caps on their heads. It was an incredible experience, and we were so happy to see the logistics come together and just the sheer exuberance of the fans.
Vegas, I've been lucky enough as well to go to Vegas a few times, and it is just, it's an assault on the senses. It's just amazing. When you compare it to some of the other massive sporting events that have taken place there, when you think of some of the biggest fights, boxing fights in history, they've taken place in Vegas. You think about the Super Bowl. How does F1 compare in those kind of conversations?
So we are so happy to be part of that collection of fabulous sporting events. But I think what sets us apart is that we actually activated the entirety of the strip. Most other sporting events will take place in a single venue. We were able to highlight all of Las Vegas on a global scale in a way that's never been done before when you consider the sheer reach of our broadcast of Formula One sporting events. And then working in partnership with all of our casino properties and sponsors to see them each activate in their own unique way to really celebrate the sport that we brought to town.
When you look at the popularity of Formula One in America, how is everything in the US in general, how much have you had to really accommodate the growing popularity of it with this race?
As Liberty Media speaking for a moment, we could not be more excited to see our acquisition thesis of 7-8 years ago really come to life here in the expansion that Formula One has had into the culture of America, reaching a whole new fan base. We have a lower average fan age. We have more women in the sport than ever before. We're reaching a new generation. My daughter is turning 17. She and her friends love Formula One. This is a whole new world that we've opened up through the efforts that we have really conducted since we acquired Formula One. And then to focus on the United States in particularly, we've had Austin for a long time, heartland of America. Then you have the expansion into Miami, the glitz, the glamour, the Latin vibe of Miami. Las Vegas was just the absolutely logical extension of that thesis of really highlighting each of the geographies in America and bringing those new fans into the sport.
From a personal point of view, though, it could have been so easy for you, because I imagine there were so many obstacles in the way, just because of just doing something like this is always going to have obstacles. There must have been so many opportunities where you just thought, okay, let's just try somewhere else. It must have been a big thing for you to be able to make this happen, because it's no mean feat, is it?
No, it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my career.
Really?
We literally had no playbook. no one has ever promoted a Formula One race in a city of the caliber of Las Vegas that doesn't sleep. Las Vegas is a 24-hour-a-day city. They never closed their doors on the casinos. They didn't have locks when COVID hit. Fascinating tidbit there. So to take this town and really convert it into a racetrack, it was incredibly challenging, but it was also incredibly exciting. And to know we were literally making history with the small SWAT team that we had put together to bring together year one is something we're very proud of.
When you're in Vegas, obviously, we've got to talk about everything else away from Formula One. Can you give me a tip? You've obviously been there a lot more than I imagine people listening to this podcast have been. Can you give me one tip of your place that you always go to as soon as you land in the city?
I think that when you look at the hospitality offerings and the entertainment opportunities from all of the properties, whether it's the highest end hospitality of the Wynn, the incredibly unique nature of the Bellagio and that beautiful fountain that still awes me every time I see it go off, or just the classic, you know, nature of the Caesar's Palace. There's so much for everyone, for every budget. And that's one of the really special things about Las Vegas. Whether you're a backpacker or a billionaire, there is a place for you in Las Vegas.
It's one of those things where if people have never been before, just finally, you can't really describe just how good it is until you see it for yourself. For the people that speak to you about Vegas that have never been, how do you even try and describe it?
It is certainly sensory overload, but I would say just take it all in, walk up and down the strip. One of the things that we did when we first started visiting Las Vegas was walk the strip many times, just to soak in everything that Las Vegas has to offer. It's an incredibly diverse town that celebrates tourism, both local and international. And we're very much looking forward to bringing those international visitors to Las Vegas. Last year, we found that north of 80% of our tickets were mainly North American driven, and we're looking forward to opening up Las Vegas Grand Prix on a much more global level this year.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for your insight.
Great to meet you, and thank you.
And thanks once again to Rene Wilms. So that's F1 in Vegas. Before we move on, actually, Darren, let's hear your perspective as someone on the ground. Just how much did Formula One take over the city when it was in town?
I'm a Formula One fan. I know I'm Canadian. I'm North American, and we're getting there. But I'm already a Formula One fan, and I was excited to see how the guys would take to it and also how the city would be reflected on television. I watched it on television instead of going to the race to see that, and it was beautiful. Like if you watched that race and you weren't captivated by wanting to come to Vegas with the Bellagio fountains and the Sphere and the neon, the fact that they did it at night was another real draw to everybody. So it didn't end up being as big as the Super Bowl, but I think that there's growth potential there beyond belief.
Well, Darren, you and your precious voice box will be pleased to know we are coming towards the end of the episode, although I think we're going to be gutted when this one does come to a conclusion, because your travel hints and tips, they've been quite incredible, from the right seat to get on the plane to where you should be sitting inside Sphere. So before you depart, if you wouldn't mind just doing one more favour and recommending a restaurant to us that people should definitely make sure they visit if they are in Vegas for any period of time. What would that be? Because you hear so much about the buffets, but beyond that, I wondered if you've got any. Yeah, have you got any other secrets for us?
I'll give you like three. Gordon Ramsay's Health Kitchen is like, you won't be disappointed, and it's world famous. And if you want to go to a world famous restaurant, Hell's Kitchen is the place to go. There's a place called Honey Salt, and it's out in Summerlin. It's one of our favorites. It's comfort food, and there you have to make a reservation, but it's not Vegas-y. Like, you're not going to come around the corner and see neon and everything, but it's just beautiful, wonderful, great food, and it's reviewed very, very highly. And as far as a club/restaurant, this is one that you have to check out. It's called The Barbershop. It's a speakeasy. So during Prohibition, they would have a front of some kind with a business, and then you'd knock on a secret door, and they would let you in, and you'd be able to go in and drink. That's what The Barbershop is. And there's a few of them in and around Vegas, but this one's really unique. It's got a barbershop in the front, and then you knock on the door, and you go in, and it is the most awesome electric nightclub that you're going to see. It's not a DJ. It's live music with amazing bands, and some of them are cover bands, and some of them are just great house bands. And it is a go-to for my wife and I to go out and check out the music there. It is absolutely spectacular, called The Barbershop. Do not skip that if you're in Vegas.
Another golden nugget from our Mr. Golden Knight. Darren, thank you. Before you go, right at the top of the podcast, you did educate us on the fact that anyone that lives in Vegas calls it Vegas, not Las Vegas. And every episode, we like to get our guests to give us a bit of a lingo or a phrase that's used on the ground that if anyone listening to this is visiting, they might use, or they might hear it and think, oh, I heard that on the Sport 24 podcast and it's familiar to me. So is there anything that you might be able to tell our listeners to listen out for, or perhaps a word that they can use themselves?
Yeah, well, don't use Sin City.
There goes the podcast introduction.
I know. Animal for your audience, you do. It makes sense. But nobody here refers to it as Sin City. I don't think they're offended by it, but it's just changed so much over the years that it's so dynamic compared to what we all thought of Vegas back in the early years. So Sin City is more for the out-of-towners, not for the locals. If you're going to Hoover Dam, you're just going to the dam. That's it. You're not going, you don't have to say Hoover. It's not like there's 15 dams out there around. We all know which dam, if you're going to see a dam, we all know which dam you're going to. So you can just say that.
Just quickly on the Hoover Dam, sorry, the dam, I should say, why go visit?
Why is it so special?
It's a like wonder of the world in its build and its just monstrosity of the dam. It's Lake Mead, and it dammed it up. It's hydroelectric, and it provides power for everything. But it's just I cannot properly explain how big this thing is. And the water level of Lake Mead has dropped so much over the years that there's I know Emma, you don't have this, but in Rob's house, there's a ring around his bathtub because he never cleans his bathtub, you know, because you can see where the water goes up all the time. There's this bathtub ring on the Hoover Dam where the water was at its height, and now it's dropped down. So you can actually see how high the water was at its peak and how far it's dropped over the years because of evaporation. But it's so massive. And the road used to take you right over the Hoover Dam.
Is it easy to get to? How far away is it from sort of central Vegas?
25 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's that close. You can get to the dam in 25 minutes as long as you're not coming from Sin City.
I suppose it depends which mode of transport you take, because in Rob's case it'd probably take a bit longer. It'll be hitchhiking or goodness knows what. But in a straightforward car you can get there in half an hour, can you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really neat.
Excellent. Well, I think that's just about it from Vegas. So if you're traveling soon, do check out Sport24's live sports schedule at sport24live.com to make sure that you won't miss any of the biggest sporting events live. That's in the air or at sea. Sport24 really does have it all. So that just leaves me to say a huge thank you to our guest, to Darren, for brilliantly guiding us around the city. Thanks so much, Darren. And I will not be calling it Las Vegas or Sin City anytime again. So thank you.
Emma, it's great to make a new friend. And thank you for talking instead of Rob. Rob and I have a rivalry that has not been properly settled.
And thanks also to my trusty TikToking travel companion. Until next time, Rob Adcock.
Thank you very much.
Please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear about other sporting cities such as Madrid, Paris, and New York. We'll be back soon exploring other destinations like Sydney and Barcelona. But from me, Emma Saunders, and the On Tour with Sport24 gang, it is goodbye, and until next time, safe travels.